The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the 9th annual Woolly Awards. I think it's the 9th. I say this every year. I've lost count. I think it could be 6th. I actually wouldn't be surprised if it was only the 6th. With me, your host, Woolly. With me on this very special occasion, our GAR stalwart, Conan Doherty. Conan, welcome to the Woolly Awards.
Thanks for having me. It's a privilege.
And Brian Carroll is making his Woolly Awards debut. Brian, how's it going?
All good, Woolly, yeah. Very privileged to be here today.
We have to get it. We have to have a hurling voice on the Woolly Awards because I just throw out the hurling awards, like, you know.
And nobody's business.
And nobody has any say on this, whether it was the most stupid thing ever. Anyways, our 9 award categories this year are number 1, goal of the year, number 2, flop of the year, number 3, on-field controversy, 4, so-called weaker county shock of the year. Wasn't that many of them this year, actually. It took me a while to even find 3 nominations. Maybe that's why we're having a new structure. Number 5, game of the year. Number 6, individual performance of the year. Number 7, surprising managerial resignation or departure. And number 8, embarrassing punditry moment of the year. So that's the last one. So let's not waste any more time. Goal of the year. First for football, the nominations are James Carr versus Galway. Don't need to say any more about this. We know how many million views did it get on Twitter. It went viral internationally anyways. It was a sensational goal. You remember this one, Brian? Picked the ball up at the 45 and just slalomed through in an unstoppable shot. Cathal Craig versus Mayo, brilliant goal as well. Little bit similar in some ways. Took the ball out along the sideline and shot in from the other side and stuck it off the outside of his boot into the top of net. And that was a really good goal at a really important time. Owen Merchant versus Kerry, beyond belief what this fella did, even though he took 45 steps. I'm not even going to hold that against him. It was a sensational goal at such an important time in the game. Jack McCaffrey versus Kerry in the first day. You know, a brilliant move by Jack, came from a kick out and he went bearing in on goal and there was only one result. Brian Hurley versus Leash, took the ball kind of on the full. A brilliant goal, it was thrown across to him. And Stephen O'Brien versus Tyrone. This was in the All-Ireland semi-final. It was a great team goal in the end. Not the most unbelievable finish in the world, but it was just the way the ball was worked up the field, Cannon.
Yeah, Paul Keane did really well that, to draw like 4 players to him and then pop it across.
Throw it across, yeah.
For Brian, who started the move way back.
Like, and you wonder how he was left so free like that. Any preferences there, Cannon, before I give the award winner?
For me, it's like James Carr or Jack McCaffrey. McCarr came off the stanchion and bounced right back out.
No, it did. That just added to the aesthetics, right?
And McCaffrey was just so clean from the kick out, the catch from Howard who's hanging in the air for 10 seconds, and it was 3 hand passes, and that was a goal. You know, it was just so perfect.
Yeah. So you're on the fence there. You've given me 2 rather than 1. So
McCaffrey, have a go, McCaffrey.
Brian, any preferences there in the football ones?
I'd be the exact same. Probably Carr for his finish. I think McCaffrey, the way that Dublin overcome the kick out, that the strategy that Kerry had, was very impressive in that. And obviously the run from McCaffrey, but the Carr finish was just phenomenal.
It was. And the way it bounced back out. And he actually ran past the ball as it was bouncing back out towards him as he went to celebrate. Like, I mean, it was beautiful. But none of your preferences have won, lads. Because we have to give I'm going to give the Woolly Award to Owen Merchant. And the reason I'm going to give it to Owen Merchant is because this fella wasn't on the team all year. Like, he wasn't getting in the mix. He won a ball from a bloody throw-in and he carries the ball forward and carries it forward, and you'd be kind of shouting at the television if you're a Dub, someone come on the loop, he's tired now, you know, knock it over the bar. Nothing had been separating those two teams, you know, for so long for him to keep going. And that finish is very underrated, lad. Off the outside of his boot, just while he was running as fast as he's running, for a fellow who hadn't been on the team and fellow who's just playing in that All-Ireland final. And last, in the previous year's All-Ireland final, he was given a man-marking job, you know, so wouldn't have got into those positions. You know, when you weigh everything up, phenomenal young player to score a goal like that. And then again, when you score a goal off the outside of the boot like that, he could just wheel away, kind of, you know, without stopping his run, and it just was a beautiful thing as well. And like, I mean, he obviously didn't celebrate it because that's not what, you know, Dublin do. I think he might have put his hand in the air. There was no crazy celebrations, but what a feeling for him.
I was unreal, and it was nice the way it was David Moore who pointed to him from the throne, and then it was David Moore who he just went whizzing by them.
Yeah.
Part of me still thinks the steps takes away from it a little bit. He was being pulled for them, like, so I don't sort of hold him against him. But yeah, the finish is unreal, and it was the winner of the All-Ireland.
It was the winner of the All-Ireland, and to be honest, when I was watching that game over in Australia, I was like, that's done now. Mm. I couldn't see Kerry. I know they'd fought back before. I just thought that start for Dublin just kind of gave them the edge in the All-Ireland. So I'm giving it for the importance of that. So that's it. Owen Merchant for goal of the year for Dublin in the All-Ireland final replay against Kerry. All right, hurling now, Brian. So you can take over from here. I've got some nominations down here. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. You're not picking it, but you can give me your expert.
I'm really happy we're here.
I love this, yeah.
Give me your expert view on it. Shamie Callanan, was it against Limerick where he actually kind of dropped the ball and took it on the half volley? Was that against Limerick? Do I have that right?
That was against Wexford.
Against Limerick. No, that was against Limerick.
Against Limerick, he
scored two goals against Limerick, obviously. One Semple Stadium in the kind of dead rubber game. And that's the one.
You
and
we know actually your role here now.
Stay out of it, Conor. I thought you meant the pool.
Yeah, but I think that was a great goal and a great finish. But he didn't mean any of it. It was one of those
he improvised.
Where it just happened. Yeah,
right.
It just happened. It won't be something you'd practice at all. It was a great goal, but probably we've better ones coming.
Yeah, okay, so Bubbles in the All-Ireland final against Kilkenny, and this is all about Shamie. This could be the Shamie Callanan award, because it's all about Shamie Callanan here, the pass, a rocket of a pass across the goal to Bubbles, who just kind of pretty much had to get it across the line.
Yeah, like, I think, 82,000 in the stadium, and only probably one person actually saw that pass on. That was Shamie. But when you look back on it, Joey Holland completely lost the plot altogether. He went running towards Shamie, completely left Bubbles all on his own. Now, Bubbles had a good first touch and finished it off the hurl, but as you said, it's all about the vision for Shamie.
Yeah, exactly. With Shamie Callanan again against Laois. And we have Shamie Callanan against Wexford, where he was running away from goal and generates the power to whip it back on his left hand side. Holy shit, like, everyone could be Shamie Callanan. Like, and we know he scored a goal in every round, Brian, but like, they were fairly special goals. The Laois one you liked.
Yeah, I love the Laois one just for the first touch. It's an audacious first touch, and everyone's been practicing it since. And he's still a lot to do to finish it, because he was at a very narrow angle and he still had to be one of the defenders. So it was a great finish still. Probably not as spectacular then as the one against Wexford. That was off his right hand side, actually. He pulled on that.
Oh, he's right.
Unbelievable finish. You know, throwback to hurling of bygone eras where people are whipping on the ball. But and he waited for that until it bounced just right, because it looked like he was going to pull and then just wait that split second till it bounced right and just fired an unstoppable top corner. That was spectacular.
Yeah, we have a few more Shamie Callanan nominations. Shane Dowling versus Kilkenny. I have to say, I've never seen a goal like that before in my life, where he's able to throw the ball up and bat it down like a tennis serve, and for it to go into the corner, like, it kind of had the trajectory of a bicycle kick, you know what I mean, because he's coming from a height and batted straight down into the corner.
Another one, I can't believe he could have been practicing that, being honest. I think it's one of those ones where he just threw it up and left fly.
Yeah.
Because you often practice the bat, but as you said, what he did, it was the trajectory of a bicycle. That's actually a very good analogy. And he just left fly, got kind of a backhand belt at it. Unbelievable, because he couldn't do much else, because if he threw it up, he was going to be blocked down. It came out of nowhere as well. It was, you know, it was one of those goals where you're like, doesn't matter who you're supporting, you just kind of jump up and go, whoa.
Yeah.
You know,
can't believe what he's just done. Another one, Patrick Horgan versus Kilkenny. His second goal in the second half, where he caught it, it's like he picked Hugh Lawler's pocket. He just stuck his hand over his shoulder, grabbed it, and it wasn't finished there. Continued on with a bit of a slalom run and then a lovely little cheeky deft finish into the net.
Yeah, brilliant goal as well. And I presume you have his first goal on it as well. The one where he took the big hit and he's off his knees.
Did it off his knees, yeah.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable goal, where just pure power, the strength of his wrist. And like, Pa uses such a heavy hurl. It's a massive wasp, but such a heavy hurl as well. It just shows that power that he has in those wrists. That game alone was unbelievable from Pat.
Yeah, it was. TJ Reid versus Galway, an absolutely brilliant goal, smashed it into the roof of the net.
Yeah, another brilliant at the dummy. He's done that so many times. Yeah. You know, feints that he's going to strike it, draws in the defender. Defender goes with the hook, hooks fresh air, and then TJ just finishes as usual. That.
Yeah, classic. I think, but that's you see that in Gaelic football so much more, the kind of dummy solo. Yeah. And in hurling, yeah. You know, he does it well, and he did it brilliantly there, that he lined up to kind of shoot, then just threw it onto the hurdle. Like you said, whoever was trying to hook him then was completely out of the game. It was beautiful.
Yeah, he has that off to a tee. He's brilliant at that, and obviously his other one is his trademark dummy. So now that definitely is down to practice.
Yeah, what rhymes with dummy is our last nomination, crummy.
Oh, God,
I can't believe I just did that. Like, in fairness to Chris Crummy, the importance of this goal can't be underestimated. Like, this goal was late in the game against Galway, where they had that famous win at home against them, Brian.
Yeah, and it was just sheer perseverance and sheer will to get that ball into the net, like, because he just kept going, took a couple of hits and just rifled into the back of the net, and massive win. Like, who would have thought, you know, that would have knocked Galway out after Galway beating Kilkenny the week previous. So some finish that championship.
Yeah, and then who knocked Dublin out? We might get that. You keep giving me links here, Brian. I sound like an RTE presenter or something here. So I do. Right, well, this is it. It's the moment has come to announce the winner of the best goal in hurling of the year, and it goes to Shane Dowling. Never seen anything like it. You'd be doing well to ever see a goal like that again when it comes to that late stage of the game. It was thrown up and smashed down into the corner of the goal. I don't know. Do, would you see lads at training trying that, Brian? Just like, you know, like,
I don't even think you would. I tell you, we're lucky. I'm on the phone here, shaking my head in disgust and disgusted now for Shamey. I think he's been hard done by. He won't be a fanny anymore, will he?
Which one? The leash one is the one you wanted.
I'd give him the one against Wexford.
The one against Wexford. But this is the thing, though, Brian. But you just said, and I understand that ground hurling thing, but you just said that Shane Dowling goal. You're watching that at home, you jump up off the couch, you go, what the hell? What a goal. Yeah. That's what goal of the year is for.
Yeah, but it's hard to watch the calendar one without going, oof.
Yeah.
Like, just wait, like when you see it in slow motion, and as Brian says, just waiting for the perfect moment for just to pop up a couple of inches and bang.
Yeah.
It's special.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, that's it, lads. The presenter has spoken. It is,
Conan, we're really getting a look in here.
Listen, I'm weighing up your opinions here, lads. Really am. It's feeding into it.
Aptly named the Woolley Awards.
So the winner of the best hurling goal of the year is Shane Dowling. All right, lads, award number two is Flop of the Year. So football, the nominations are Tipperary footballers. Really had a nightmare year. They got relegated out of Division 2 to Division 3. They got beaten by Limerick, a Division 4 team in the Munster Championship. And then they got beaten by Down in the first round of qualifiers. In fairness, an improved performance against Down away, but still a horrific year. Carlow footballers, they were relegated from Division 3. Back to Division 4, then they got hammered by both Meath and Longford in the Championship, didn't win a game, played two and got hammered in both. You know, pretty much embarrassing for the trajectory they were on the way up, you know. And then we have Monaghan, the third nominations, almost relegated from Division 1, just about stayed in, then lost to their big time rivals, Cavan, and then got destroyed by Armagh. You know, any preferences there, Conan?
Ooh, like three very worthy nominees.
It is.
And all of them because of the trajectory they were on. Like Tipperary felt like they were always on the cusp of something, and then just back to square one. Carlow, I mean, that was a terrible year. Like that was just really bad. Like it's rock bottom stuff. And Monaghan, because they were in the semi-final the year before. And again, you're thinking, are they going to push on? They should have beaten Tyrone in that semi-final. And then, beaten by Cavan, out against Armagh.
Yeah.
Honestly, I could go either there. I'll bow
They're
to
all,
it.
Yeah,
really,
they
really.
Are all. Any preference there, Brian, for you?
Well, I think Carlow's hashtag Carlow Rising, for that alone, I'd nearly give it to him because there was no rising this year.
No, Carlow Falling was the hashtag, I think, this year. And obviously they have a good PR man in the former coach who likes to talk up his performance with them, but I suppose he doesn't like to pay too much attention to this year, which was, let's be honest, horrific from Carlow. So the only way back up is for Carlow now. I'm going to go for Tipperary, lads, because really an All-Ireland semi-final in Liam Kern's first year, and then he's into year four, and you're thinking, Jesus, and they had a few injuries and different excuses for the different years, and then to be relegated for Division 2, the Limerick result was just, you know, embarrassing, really, for being honest, because Limerick went horrifically or pretty badly in Division 4, so that was a huge shock, and then to not win a game at all, you know. So for flop of the year in Gaelic football, I'm going to go for Tipperary. All right, hurling, Brian. So the nominations for hurling. Do you have any nominations yourself? You can't. you might know one nomination. You're not.
I might know one there. Could it be Offaly?
You're not going to escape from that. But like, I mean, I think genuinely for flop of the year in football, there's three very, very strong candidates. And in fairness for hurling, there's three very, very strong candidates as well, because we have the Clare hurlers. And the reason Clare are in there, even though they won 2 and lost 2 in the Munster League, it was what was expected of them, wasn't it, Brian? There was a lot of people at the start of the year potentially tipping them for an All-Ireland. They had gone
so
well.
I did myself, yeah.
You did yourself, yeah. And they should have beaten Galway last year in the semi-final. And yes, they did win 2 games, but they struggled over a very poor Waterford team, and then they got destroyed in their next 2 games. You know, it was the manner of those defeats, I suppose, that have them in as a nomination for flop of the year.
They only beat Cork in that dead rubber, really, at the end too.
At the end,
Cork,
yeah. At home,
we're going to qualify anyway. So yeah, at home there was a bit of a kick in that, all right. But as you said, they really flopped in the middle of that Munster championship.
Yeah, Waterford, nightmare year, I suppose. Not coming on the back of a very good year like Clare, coming on the back of another very poor year last year. I'd imagine if I was to look back, they would have been a nomination last year. Hammered by Tipperary, hammered by Limerick, hammered by Cork. A minus 52 score difference, mutiny amongst the players. Like, to say that they are a worthy candidate for flop of the year would be an understatement.
Yeah, 2 years now in the Munster Championship and they haven't won a game, but they're okay from relegation. I know that's a sore pint and another pint altogether, but you know, their performance has been absolutely atrocious considering they were in an All-Ireland final only a couple of years ago, and then obviously getting to a league final this year. Like, they were beaten comprehensively in terms of hurling in that league final, yeah. But they were only beaten by 8 points. But
had a league, the hurling league now is a farce, though, Brian. If we're being honest,
it's just
another Walsh Cup. You know what I mean? If we're being honest,
because the way the championship is structured, it's just a warm up now at this stage.
It's a warm up. That's it. And then obviously last one is Offaly, who got relegated to Chris Durring and got relegated out of in the league as well in a really horrific year for you, Brian.
Absolutely horrific. No, only one win the whole year, and that was against Carlow in another, I think it was a dead rubber game as well.
Oh no, that so, was to avoid, they avoided relegation with that, did they?
No. They won that game, which was a dead rubber,
and then
got beaten by 8 points up at half time, Carlow down to 14 men, and we still managed to get relegated. And then obviously in the Dom McDonagh, we lost all 4 games. I was there myself for 2 of them, and just a horrendous year, just one thing after another.
Yeah, exactly. So all noises from the camp now good under Michael Fennelly?
Yeah, they seem to be trending away. There's a big panel at the moment that they'll be caught over the next couple of weeks. So, but look, for hurling people in Offaly, like, we're playing Kildare, we're playing Down. You know, that tells you the standard that we're at the moment, and we deserve to be there on merit, that's for sure.
Yeah, you deserve to be there, and you deserve to be winners of flop of the year.
Congratulations. Yeah, congratulations
to Offaly, your commiserations.
We won something this year.
Okay, so award number 3 is on-field controversy, and we'll start off with hurling this time. I think the hurling ones are probably better this year. Is Greg Kennedy catching the ball versus Kilkenny. Comes onto the field. Brian, you can take it away from there. Like, outrageous stuff, really.
Outrageous stuff. And I was actually commentating the same evening, and it was like, what just happened there? Like, the referee's back turned as well, so he really didn't have a clue what was after happening. And it was just the crowd went absolutely mental. And I never seen the Kilkenny crowd to get so heated. And, you know, he got away scot-free. I think that's actually one of the great things about it. Like, he got away with murder and then got to go off and just stay on the sideline. I know he got a ban afterwards, but, you know, he really should have been sent off. But Greg Kennedy, he doesn't regret one second of it, I'm sure.
That could have caused a riot, really, if you're being honest. Like, I mean, because you ever notice when, like, if a selector gets involved and one of the opposition team puts their hand on him, for some reason, players are much more protective of one of their backroom team being touched than one of their own teammates. You ever notice that?
It's always mental.
It really flares up. But anyways, the other one, on-field controversy, another nomination, is Richie Hogan's red card. And, like, I mean, this blew up way more than it should have, really, Brian, if we're being honest. Like, I think the Kilkenny pundits didn't help it by, you know, I thought, be honest, they said it to JJ, that it's only the Kilkenny pundits that are actually defending this red card. And I don't know any neutral. I think you were a little bit more sympathetic towards him.
Yeah, look, I think letter of the law, it was a red card. Naked eye, when I saw it first, I thought it was yellow. Personally, I could see that Cottle Barrett had moved backwards. He did what no one expects him to do. Everyone would have expected Cottle Barrett to go forward down the line. Richie Hogan would have nailed him with a shoulder, and that's all Richie Hogan's intent was. But Cottle Barrett did something that you just don't expect, and he stood backwards to avoid the hit. And Richie obviously caught him. He just kind of threw out his arm because he realised he wasn't going to get him with that big shoulder. I can see why there was controversy. It ruined all Ireland, but then that's not the referee's fault. The referee really didn't want to send him off. He spent ages deliberating over it, but ultimately he did get the right call.
But that's the thing, Conan. It's almost like some of the pundits saying he shouldn't have gone off because it ruined the game. What kind of analysis is that, though? Like, I mean, let's be honest.
That's not up to the ref to keep the game entertaining.
Well, then why implement any rules if it won't, you know, send the game in the direction you want to send it?
Yeah, and I think we all probably feel sympathy. Like, if you're about to shoulder fresh air, then your natural tendency is to maybe lift up your arm and try to get something.
Yeah.
But when you hit somebody in the face, then you probably won't do it again. Like, it doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. Like, it's still dangerous.
Yeah. So I was saying at the time that this actually happened to me in a couple of football games until I had to figure out, I'm trying to shoulder someone, I miss them, and all of a sudden then you hear opposition players going, hey, and I'm like, what are they giving out about? I missed him. And then it's because your elbow just comes up to try and get a little bit on him. I did it twice and then I figured out, feck, I better stop doing that because that's actually looking like I'm trying to elbow this fella.
Have you caught somebody in the jaw?
There's a couple of things there. Number one, I know it's something really satisfying about hitting a lad a big shoulder and driving over the line, but it's actually, if you miss him, that's the line that you hit. Like, you're going to get sent off because you're invariably going to hit him in the head or something. So you really should have been trying to stand him up in the tackle there and using your hands.
That's the thing. I can't remember which manager of mine said that he didn't want to ever see that's a cop out.
Yeah,
the easiest thing to do is to launch yourself at someone and then to sidestep you. And you haven't helped the team.
Most players are actually able to get out of that big hit. You know, it needs to be absolutely perfect. And then the other thing is, probably from Richie Hogan's perspective, and it's the way the Kilkenny people play, like, to give them credit, you go back to the hit he got in the All-Ireland semi-final off Bill Cooper, where Bill Cooper nearly decapitated him, and Richie just bounced back up, and Bill got a yellow, you know, and it was the same referee then as well, you know, so it's the quarterfinal. You can see why people get angry over it and say there's inconsistency in the game, though.
Yeah, no, exactly. The other one, Hawkeye, a couple of times with Brian Hogan, who caught the ball over the bar. I don't think so. Cottle Barrett was in here last week and he was laughing at the fact that these were pints at all, and he would have been fairly close to them. So, but we know we're going to have yellow slitters now, Brian, so we're going to have the technology in that slitter to be able to tell us exactly.
I don't think the second one was. That in the All-Ireland, I don't think the one in the All-Ireland final, no way. And I think the most confusing thing for people, whether it's in the stadium or at home, this rubbish that they put up, the trajectory of the ball, and it shows as if it's gone about 2 or 3 yards over the bar. And you're like, there was literally centimetres in that.
Yeah.
You know, so like, they really need to clean that one up. And the other thing, as I can't understand, is why they won't show the camera angle. Because there is clearly a camera there. They're able to show it for what they want to show it. And then they won't show the camera angle. Can we actually really zoom in on that and see where his hand was?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's fair enough. So the winner of the on-field controversy in hurling, it has to go to Richie Hogan. Let's be honest, it's all we spoke about for weeks after the All-Ireland final. So congratulations, Richie Hogan, on-field controversy in hurling. Okay, in football, lads, we have 3 nominations. Owen Merchant, who just won Goal of the Year, and now on-field controversy for the amount of steps. You could Was there a big deal about that, Conan? I know I was away in Australia. Like, I mean, was there a big deal? We know you're not allowed to question anything Dublin related, or you're an anti-Dublin hater and you're a culture and all this. But were people calling this out, or was this brushed?
I saw this during the week as well. People arguing about it, like the merchant steps.
Defending the steps?
No, people. Yeah, somebody saying it took too many steps, and Dublin fans saying we won five in a row. Shut up, or, you know.
yeah. You hate us,
but like, yeah, still going on. Like, you know, now in December,
right? So this, was there much of the analysis? I mean, after the game?
Yeah. That, like, that's straight away. Like, you know, during the game as well, you can see it on Twitter and stuff. Like, right, people just straight on it. You know, but then it always goes back to the time. Remember, I was saying to Kane, I think as long as you're being fouled, you should be allowed to run. And Kane just leant over and said, "That's rugby."
That's
so I've had to rethink everything since.
Did you hear that, Brian? It was one of the best moments on the show. Like, I think you should just be allowed to stay running if you're being fouled, Conan. That's called rugby. Okay, right. The next one is Peter Hart's black card. There wasn't that much on-field controversy in football if I'm throwing in a black card, but this one was, you know, it was a very big moment in that game because this was our first big, huge game of the season. And let's be honest, it had a huge bearing on the game. And for me, I think the analysis I had on Monday was that Ryan McHugh completely made the most of it. Yeah, Hart was a little bit reckless lunging in, but Ryan McHugh knew exactly what he was doing and got him the black card.
Yeah, and it was the one that got him suspended as well. He got one rescinded then, but at the time it caused a shitstorm. I think like all black card debates now, you get so boring where it comes down to the letter of the law. And I was sort of thinking, well, he put his foot across and he probably shouldn't have. And like Matty Forrest, and he tackles very clumsily, you know. So yeah, I don't think this is spicy enough.
No. Well, we had very few the black card debate, which is a favourite on the Marty squad. Every time I was driving home, it's just constant black card, is it? And there's no, like, that's just an opinion on whether it's a black card. It can get a little bit boring. We didn't have much this year. I thought that was probably the biggest one. The other nomination is Turlough O'Brien and Brendan Murphy. And their former coach, I can't exactly, his name's escapes me now.
Rhymes with coacher.
He's a coacher. So, do you see the footage of this, Brian? This was Turlough kind of out of his mind at this stage. It was a very important loss in the league where they thought they had been rowed by the referee, and he took off from one sideline over to the other. Did you see this, Brian? Or am I?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah.
So this is just when managers lose control. Yeah. It could be on like one of those TV channels.
YouTube hit.
Yeah, YouTube hit. So yeah, that's the third nomination. That's a proper on-field controversy. I suppose Merchant is, and Peter Hart is less so. So the winner of on-field controversy has to go to Turlough O'Brien, Brendan Murphy, and their former coach, whose name escapes me right now. All right, lads, we'll continue on. Award number four is the so-called Weaker County Shock of the Year. So our first nomination, we've mentioned this, there is some crossover in some of this, lads. Limerick versus Tipperary, this is in the football. This was a huge shock at the start of the year. I have to say though, there was not many shocks in either hurling or football from weaker counties. Again, I've touched on this, that's why we want the new championship, that's why hurling is tiered, and you know, you don't see it all that often. Obviously Limerick beat Tipperary 3-11 to 1-10. There was no fluke about this. They got a late goal, but they were already 4 points up. The late goal put it out to 7. It was a convincing win for Limerick against Tipperary, and to be honest, Liam Kearns was probably a dead man walking after that. Second nomination is Carlow, who drew with Galway in the league. You remember that, Brian? Like, I mean, again, it is hard to find them in hurling, I suppose. We could probably throw Kerry beating Offaly in that relegation playoff, but was that a huge shock at the time? I thought Offaly would have beaten them in that, you know, with their backs to the wall. But
we got a man sent off after 10 minutes. That's what killed us.
Oh, that was
and
it.
We missed the penalty. So we definitely threw it away that day.
Yeah. Carlow drawing with Galway in the league, though, in Dr. Cullen Park. That was a huge shock.
Yeah. A big shock, but then, like, you look at Galway really went through that motions in the league. They only had, I think, 5 or 6 of their starting 15 on the team that day, and then, like, Waterford beat them in the league semi-final after. So Galway were kind of going through the motions. That, as you said, that league, you can't read much into that.
Yeah, true. One match we can read loads into was the winner of this award, and that was Laois beating Dublin in Amour Park. One of the greatest matches in GAA I've ever been at, especially involving my own county. I remember saying after the game that in 1992, I was 14 and we went to Navan to watch Laois take on Meath. and Meath had been in the All-Ireland final the year before. Remember, they had the four games with Dublin, and Meath were like a huge team at the time. And Laois went up to Navan in their own backyard in a knockout first round and put Meath out. And it was just like, geez, I think we were under 14s with Portlaoise, and we'd played a challenge match that morning. You know, when you do that, you're with all your friends then on the terrace, and we all just charged down to the wire and got onto the pitch, and you're just running kind of out of control. And then the only other time I've just blindly wanted to be out in the field for no apparent reason was this game. The final whistle blew. I was with Itzy and two friends, and I just abandoned them. I was just out. I just wanted to. And it was when I ran out in the field then, I didn't know what to do because I wouldn't know the hurlers that well. I didn't, you know, want to be like an imposter at, you know, don't go to that many games. And I just ran around for a while and then just stopped. And that was it. And then I just kind of looked around to see that I know anyone. And then you hug a few people. And I don't know, just don't have enough moments like that, you know, when you follow your own county. Well, I haven't anyways, Brian. I don't know about you.
Our days are gone. We had them in the 90s.
Well, you did.
I tell you, I'm lucky I didn't have a forfeit for that match because I called on this show that there's no way Laois would beat Dublin. No way at someone that came up from Joe McDonough would win a qualifier. I fairly ate my hat on that one, but I agree with you. That has to be the winner list.
Yeah. Have you any moments with Derry? I'll get Tyrone in the first round that time when they were a defending champions. 04, was it?
That was 2006. Healy Park. Yeah, 6-0 last time.
You were out in the field there, were you? No.
Yeah, we were. But I had the saddest moments of my life, actually. But the happiest moments, it was 2004. Derry beat Westmeath in the All Ireland quarterfinal.
Oh yeah.
And it was the first of a double header, and the Derry fans ran onto the pitch and invaded it. Dublin were out warming up. The Derry fans just sort of taking it all in. The stewards trying to get us out of there. Just one. A quarterfinal match and got beat the next day, but yeah, great memories. Mickey Moore was in charge.
Yeah, that was a poor memory for me because Westmeath beat us in the Leinster final that year in 04. Anyways, winner of the so-called this was the easiest one to call, lads. Laois beating Dublin. Congratulations to Laois for the shock of the year. Okay, game of the year is the next one, lads. Number 5. Now we'll run through some of these fairly quick. The football one first. Armagh versus Mayo. A classic qualifier in McHale Park. Mayo go on these adventures, and this year was no different. They should have been beaten really by Armagh, who you know, rallied really well in the second half, but Mayo just stayed in front. Donegal versus Kerry in the second round of the Super 8s. 120-120. Michael Murphy 1-7. Paul Geaney 1-4. Stephen O'Brien 3 points. Killian Spillane, I think, got 3 points as well. That might have been his first start in that game. Just an outstanding game. It was a shootout. It was like, I can't believe Donegal have come to Croke Park to take Kerry on like this. And it was like just non-stop. One unbelievable point was followed by another unbelievable point.
And so many like class individual battles going on as well. Remember Menaman was marking Clifford and doing some job on him.
Yeah.
And we had McHugh against Gavin White for 20 odd minutes or whatever, but that was brilliant beforehand. Some class passes, both teams going out to win it. Which is been rare over this decade, but it sort of showed the changing of the guard.
It can be done, yeah, and it is changing a little bit. Armagh versus Down in the Ulster Championship. This was a first classic of the year, and this was a brilliantly exciting game. We saw a lot of long kick passes to both of their full forward lines, you know, and Armagh were 5 points up with 4 minutes to go, and Down get 1-2 to draw it, and then you think Armagh are gone, and it was kind of the emergence of Burns, Jarlo Burns, Jarlett's son. He was unbelievable that day, just a sensational engine on him. So he kind of made his entrance into the intercounty scene, and then followed it up obviously with two great games against Cavan as well.
Yeah, because this was the one where all the stats were going on about Armagh and their Ulster Championship record as well.
There was a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, and it looked like they had completely blown it, and then they had to dig deep again. That was like, this is the Cross McGlen boys as well were really firing for them, and Mernon came back, remember, and he had such a big effect on them. Ulster Championship.
That was a brilliant game. Yeah. And then obviously Cavan and them had a very good game the first day. And, you know, we were all raving about what's happened this Ulster Championship. This is fair tale. So the Munster final was brilliant. It was Cork 3-10, Kerry 1-19. Nobody was really expecting that because Kerry went into an early lead and it was like, here's another hammering. And then Cork start getting goals and stayed in it. I was in Kilkenny watching that one Saturday evening at a stag or something. You just remember where you are when there's a really good game, don't you? The winner of the game of the year, though, in football has to be the All-Ireland final the first day. my God, what did this game not have? Like, it had everything. And it had Dublin as the champions that they are, dead and buried. And to do what they did to Kerry in those last 10 minutes and pin Kerry in when Kerry had an extra man and Stephen Cluxton moving out playing cornerback.
Yeah.
This is just beyond belief. The scores that we saw, the controversy with Cooper getting sent off, the individual performances, Jack McCaffrey's performance, Clifford's performance, Geeney, all these. It was one of the best games you'll ever see. And for it to happen in All-Ireland final was just unbelievable.
Yeah, keeper like Stephen Cluxton stepping up as well, making a couple of saves. You know, it was unreal. And it actually spilled over into the first half of the second game as well, which is one of the best first half I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever. But like, I think the first game overall.
The second half of that would have, you know, that would have been a match for it, only for Dublin pulled away after the goal of the season was scored by Owen Merchant. What do you think, Brian? Game one, All Ireland final. You'll agree with me on this one.
Yeah, definitely. I remember growing up watching there was a great video about the Kerry-Dublin rivalry. The VHS, watching them for years and absolutely enthralled with those battles. And I think that was definitely a throwback to this. Quality was unbelievable at there. And from a hurling person, it was actually worth watching.
That's higher praise we won't get, Colin. So this is just a big moment. So there you go. Dublin versus Kerry, game one, All-Ireland final, 116-116 is the football game of the year. Hurling now, Brian, and nominations. Jeez, there's some very good games in the hurling championship. Both All Ireland.
Surprised at that.
Both All Ireland, but this always happens. Like, I mean, it was stuttering until semi final stage, though, if we're being honest. Obviously, Laois and Dublin was a brilliant game and a huge shock. We had Kilkenny and Galway in the Leinster Championship. Munster Championship was a big letdown, I suppose, this year, whereas we had non stop classic games in that. We didn't have them this year.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. The Munster was a real letdown and we were gloating. We were very happy, JJ and myself and you, for most of that summer.
We are, yeah.
Going on about the quality of the Leinster Championship and what it brought to the Hurling Championship this year. So long may that continue.
But that Kilkenny-Galway game, that was an unbelievable game because Kilkenny were dead and buried and then they made this big comeback towards the end of it. And you know, we talked about the TJ goal in that. I think it was Brian Concannon scored a goal after 50 minutes and it put them something like 9 ahead, and then Kilkenny staged their comeback.
Yeah, and Galway still saw it out. But there was a couple of great games and probably not even on the list actually. That Dublin-Wexford was another cracking game. Sean Moran getting a free to draw the game
you did that with RTE as well, didn't you? I remember you saying that.
And it was a cracking game because it looked like Wexford had done enough that, you know, they got a couple of goals and looked like they'd done enough, but Dublin just somehow got back into it. And
yeah, Dublin Kilkenny was a brilliant game too. That was a Greg Kennedy
that's
thing
right,
and then
yeah.
It was Dublin were well in that game until Kilkenny kind of pulled away towards the end.
That's right, yeah. And that was a real humdinger game, a real physical game. Dublin came with what I would say, it was Gregory Kennedy and Matty Kenny kind of tactics. The three halfbacks man-marked, pestered the shit out of the three half-forwards for Kilkenny and did a fine job at it for long, long periods of the game. And one part, actually, if you remember, it was a big controversy. Wally Walsh and... was it Crummy? I can't remember. They went at it like two bulls anyway. And eventually
Crummy,
won. And Crummy then fell to the ground as if he was KO'd, but... you know, that was a great game too.
Yeah, the winner though of the hurling game of the year, according to me, is the All-Ireland semi-final Tipperary against Wexford. Absolutely unbelievable game.
Yeah, definitely.
128 to 320. There was a sending off. There was a penalty. There was disallowed goals. There was the Liam Ryan point, which we all know. Then there was the Leach in goal that looked an unbelievable goal that looked like had completely wrapped it up, even though there was 20 minutes left. But Wexford were completely, their tails were up at that stage, and then they only score once from play after the 50th minute and Tipperary come back into it. And you know, look, there was just so much to talk about after that game on the Monday. It was incredible,
and I'll agree with you fully in this. It was just unbelievable. And Wexford to lose their way, to be so structured for so many years under Davy, and then literally just getting over the final the hurdle. And they literally just lose the plot and start poking it long, lose their poke out strategy, launch everything long, their sweeper becomes ineffective. And it's just, what did they just do? And, you know, tip to their credit, because the one thing they've been criticised over the last couple of years is they don't have any bottle and they can't back it up. And they really were men that day, every one of them. But in particular, Ronan Maher, fullback. Paddy obviously always does it, but Ronan, fullback, launching bombs down off him, he was unreal.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. So there you go. Hurling game of the year was the All-Ireland semi-final between Tipperary and Wexford. Okay, so individual performance of the year. This is award number 6. So we'll start with football. I've loads of these lads. There was loads of good performances, individual performances. I think Kieran Kilkenny in the All-Ireland final replay, Conan. All he had to do was get a simple message but from Jim Gavin to say, will you maybe start trying to attack a little bit more? What was it like Homer Simpson in that Simpsons episode? Can you, when he was given a job of being the manager by this, whatever your man's name, he says, can you work harder? Okay, sure, boss.
Yeah. Mr. Burns, is it?
No, it was somebody else. But anyways, Kieran Kilkenny, All-Ireland final replay, 0-4, and he set the tone early in it. Like, I mean, he was just going for it. And it's like, this, how much criticism have I given him down through the years on this show about passing it sideways and being called a playmaker by people who just don't know what a playmaker is? And that's what Kieran Kilkenny is capable of. It's such a waste of a player, you know, because anyone else can nip the play together and take a 1-2 exactly. and keep it ticking over. That's not special player kind of stuff, which is what he has always been capable of.
Like, you don't need Kilkenny around the back just to take the ball and switch the play. Like, you know, anybody could do that. Like, and him scoring 4 points and being so dangerous for them attacking wise and setting up scores, it didn't take away anything from his all round game. Like, he was still winning breaks and kickouts and doing so much work down around the middle, and he was able to do all that too.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, that interview we had of him where he was talking about, it was just a message, just will you go and help us win the game? And he's like, all right, yeah, like, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Why did you not ask him before?
It makes you wonder, was that not asked of him before? You know, maybe not asked of him, but can you do all that work? And he thought, maybe that's what I need to do. And maybe miscommunication, I don't know. When, I suppose, Brian, when you're winning as much as Dublin do, there isn't the same kind of pressure maybe to change somebody's role or ask them to do something different. If it's not broken, don't fix it.
And probably the professional area where it's all caught up in stats, and we hear about, you know, Kieran Kilkenny having 50 possessions. Yeah. But as you said, you know, analyse them. Like, they're going sideways and backwards. And and I think probably the most frustrating thing from a neutral perspective looking at Kieran Kelly is to see that he was having no real bearing on the game. And then to see him then be able to do that in Ireland, because you know he has that in his locker. You know, he can score 3 or 4 or 5 points in play. He can go through for goals. You know, Conor Callaghan can do it, obviously, but Kieran Kilkenny can do it just as well, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And he had been kept very quiet in the first game by Crowley had done very well on him, so like, he needed to improve it, and he did. Conor Cox in the Connacht final, some outrageous scores. The outside of the left from the sideline is one that will live long in the memory. If it was point of the year, that would definitely be in the mix. We were debating, did he mean it on Monday? It was so outrageous. What did we come down on that he did? Oh yeah, he looked across, but the person wasn't. He didn't. We came down on the side that he did mean it, right?
Yeah,
I think the way we analysed it, whoever was at the back post wasn't close enough for a pass. Mm. There was something, anyways, some reason where we agreed that he meant it. That was unbelievable from him. Jack McCaffrey in the first game, Jack McCaffrey single handedly kept Dublin's 5 in a row intact, because without him, 1-3 from wing back, he pretty much played as a wing forward that day. He wasn't really being picked up, which was beyond belief tactically from Kerry. Gavin White just didn't know what to do with him, and he was dropping off him. And drop off Jack McCaffrey and you're completely screwed. Why would you even want to give that man a head of steam and let him get some kind of momentum up and go past you? That was one of the best individual performances. Paddy Durkin, we have to stick a defender in there, Conan. Destroyed Ryan McHugh. And then destroyed Jack McCaffrey 2 games in a row.
Yeah, Paddy Durkin, he was brilliant. Like that one against Ryan McHugh, we were talking about, like, will Mayo do that? Will they be afraid to lose something against Jack McCaffrey as well? I thought McCaffrey wouldn't be bothered by Durkin, but Durkin was having such an impact for Mayo going forward. That was the thing. He wasn't just marking them.
Yeah.
He was driving forward for them. It'd be hard to overlook him as well, Willie. I don't know who you've got written down here, but
It definitely will. Michael Murphy versus Kerry scored 1-7. That was a brilliant performance by him. And Ian Corbett needs a shout out. He scored 1-2 from centre half back against Tipperary in that shock in the first round of the championship. And his 1-2 he scored were just spectacular 1-2. I remember saying at the time that, you know, the goal and the 2 points were all like this man does only knows one way of playing, and that's at like 100 miles an hour. He's just like an exciting, and there's nothing I love more. I don't know, Brian, is it, I know, well, I am a traditionalist, but there's something about an attacking centre half back. Centre half backs now just stay back and sit in the pocket, and you think of Kevin Moran and these lads, you know, just these images you have of a number six bombing up the field. We need more of that. Tom Kelly will throw in a leash man. I used to love just get down the field. You're bombing down the middle. There's no better way to do it.
Yeah, Wexford are doing it to their credit. I think that's what makes them so difficult. They're Liam Ryan's point from full back actually against Tipperary. You know, throw that one into the mix. Their half backs are bombing up the field as well. It's very hard to deal with from a hurling perspective because you're so used to defenders, you know, more or less staying in their position, not going too far beyond midfield. So it's a nightmare, but yeah, there is something special, as you said, about a centre back driving up the field.
There is, and that's the thing. And but it's just like a left or right half back go up and they go up the wing and then they'll try to cut in. Centre half back just bombs down the middle and, you know, is just sets panic into the opposition. What are we on it now? I know it's not as much in Gaelic football now with more defensive systems, but still, we saw recently Kilcoo centre back against Derry Gonnelly, or no, the Derry Gonnelly centre back against Kilcoo have a great chance. You know, it's still doable.
Yeah, and when I saw Corbett, I think it is the number six as well. It's the number six.
Yeah.
It looks like a Sigerson player who's just a cut above, like, you know, the level he's playing at. Like, it's just far too good for these boys, and it's just having so much fun out there. Like, you're going straight through the middle. Corbett just plays with such freedom. But McCaffrey, sort of the same thing. Like, I don't know, like, Kerry were dropping off him. I remember doing stats of him in that game, and he touched the ball 4 times in his own half. Every other time, he was just picking it up in the Kerry half and just driving at them.
Okay. David Goff needs a mention here. We don't have a special referee performance of the year, but his performance in the first All-Ireland, even though he got criticised at half-time for it, every decision that man made in that final, other than Cluxton maybe diving too early for the Gini miss penalty, Cluxton was way out off his line. But other than that, all those big decisions, and they were massive pressure decisions because of the pressure that was on him going into it, and I didn't help, you know, with that. Like, I thought, Jesus, after his performance in 16 and him living in Dublin, and it's unfair now when you look back at it in hindsight, even saying that, when you saw the way he made those calls and all of them being right under that pressure.
Because, it's one thing maybe suggesting that he might be swayed because he's living in Dublin, but then, I think this was the Kerry point of view. It's like, either way now, people are in his head. And he's going to try and, like, side with somebody to try and prove a point, but he didn't. He just looked at the play and called it as he saw it, and he got it all right. And, like, you know, even the half time, I know there was a bit of controversy, but everybody seemed to be agreeing with him. Like, you know, like, everybody was just like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, because that's where we're setting up one of our later awards, embarrassing punditry moment of the year. So anyways, the individual performance of the year, I don't hide any, it's no secret how big a fan I am of Jack McCaffrey. I'm an ex number seven myself, and I love an attacking halfback. To do that in an All-Ireland final where your team is under pressure, you're against the ropes, and to score 1-3 like that and keep your team in it, I think he's the outstanding candidate for individual performance of the year. It's Jack McCaffrey in the first All-Ireland final. Okay, Brian, hurling. We have some fairly standout performances here as well. The first two are just like, these two fellas are on another planet. Patrick Horgan, 3-10, 2-2 from play against Kilkenny, and TJ Reid, 2-11, 2-4 from play against Galway. Let's start there.
Yeah, I think you have one of those two as the winners anyway. I think Patrick Horgan, just a performance for the ages. Like, he was obviously class all championship, but this one will go down for a long time. People will be talking about that game and that performance and the two goals. We've even already talked about them.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Just you know, you see him score those points as well, where he just comes around the corner and fires it over his shoulder off his left hand side. You know, he got shortlisted for Hurler of the Year. You know, I'd say that had a massive bearing on this. Like, you know, and to bear in mind, you know, they didn't reach the All-Ireland semi-finals. I'm usually very critical of the fact that you usually have to get to the All-Ireland semi-final to get an All-Star or that. But he's just unbelievable. And you know, Cork people probably didn't appreciate him enough when he first came in the scene. Probably thought he was a little bit lazy, didn't work hard enough, but He's different level at the moment. He's arguably Cork's greatest forward since Christy Ring, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely is. And TJ Reid, it's just like 2-11 for TJ Reid. At this stage, you're not even surprised, you know, that this is what he's notching up. He's just doing it on such a regular basis for both Kilkenny and for Ballyhale Shamrocks. He's I think it's because of his profession. Like, I mean, he works in strength and conditioning. He's his own gym. And for me, physically, he just looks a lot of the time looks on a different level to everyone else on the field. The work rate he's able to get through, and also to be able to combine that work rate with that level of scoring that you just don't. How rare is that?
Yeah, and he's been so closely man marked all the time as well. Now, he went through a couple of games this year where he didn't score a huge one from play, and still come out with man of the match because his overall influence on the game. He's really become selfless and works so hard and hooks and blocks and wins rucks and, you know, has great vision. So he'll throw the ball out to the man in the best position. And we saw that actually only lately in the Leinster club final. So he is an all-rounder. He didn't have that part of his game either when he first broke on the scene in Kilkenny. He was always able to put up massive scores. But, you know, Brian Cody moulded him into the player that he is today. I think obviously he was an unbelievable talent, but I think Cody got him to the next level.
Yeah, we've been a few more nominations. Ronan Marr versus Wexford. You know, I think the balls he caught in the second half of that game especially was unbelievable. He was brilliant. Adrian Mullen, excellent for such a young player against Limerick. He scored 4 from playing the All-Ireland semi-final. And Willie Dunphy, a wrecking ball, as Cheddar described him here on that Monday in midfield. 4 points from play from midfield. Yeah. And not just the 4 points from play. Jeez, he hit everything that moved, and so did Chad Dwyer.
One freeze, yeah. And he was accepted. That was a performance for the ages too. Like, that's one that'll live in long in the memory for Leash people.
Yeah, no, definitely will. So the winner of the hurling individual performance of the year is Patrick Horgan. You can't look past this, lads. The two goals are practically nominations for goal of the season, even though I forgot the first one. Brian thought I had it on my list, but I didn't. That was a brilliant goal. And look, it's just the whole performance, the whole thing. And you're not even throwing into consideration the distance this lad scores these frees from. So he scored 3-10, 2-2 from play. So it was 1-8 from place balls. But at the same time, you're not those 8 points aren't always tap overs for him. He's able to go back into his own 45 and score from there.
Oh, he's a massive poke of the ball as well. And, you know, like, Anthony Nash used to be the long range free taker, and, you know, he's more or less resigned now to stay in the goal because Horgan's coming back so far and hitting him. And the main thing is, most of the time he just stands over the ball as well. It doesn't change his stance where he stands behind the ball and launches his body behind it.
Right.
He's able to just stand over it and just slot it over seamlessly. But as I said, his wrists are so strong. He's hurled really heavy. He's just like, he's flicking at the ball. Class act. Definitely, yeah. Has to get that performance of the year.
Yeah, so congratulations, Patrick Horgan, is individual performance of the year. All right, so number 7 is surprise manager resignation of the year. And you're going to say that this is a very obvious winner here. But then you throw John Sukru into consideration, and everything's relative here. So John Sukru leaving Leash after getting them 2 promotions in a row, from Division 4 to Division 2. Nobody really wanted that job. Got them into the last 12 for 2 years in a row in the championship. They went down to Monaghan and Navan, which wasn't a terrible loss. They went down badly against Cork, admittedly, in Thurles this year. But at the same time, after the improvements he made with Leash, it was a huge surprise to everyone in Leash anyways, and I'm sure outside of Leash, that he stepped down, Conan.
Yeah, and well, the Corks, I think, proved that they had stepped up a level come championship, you know, given, especially the performances against Kerry, and I don't want to say it, but for the first 55 minutes against Dublin, like, you know, they looked like a good team. Like, so in hindsight, it wasn't that bad a loss to go out to Cork. Got the Leinster final the year before. And, like, yeah, when I heard he had stepped down, I assumed that, right, there must be a big job waiting for him. Like, that could be the only reason, because he was doing so well, on a great trajectory. He's obviously a good manager. But, yeah, just to sort of step down and away from it.
It was a funny one, yeah. So we went for another Kerry man, Mike Quirk. So we'll see how he gets on. Micheál O'Donoghue, pretty big surprise, Brian. Like, I know they didn't get out of the group this year, but he had another year left on his contract and had won an All-Ireland and just had Galway, like, in the top 2, pretty much favourites every year.
Yeah, and players loved him as well, and they really didn't want to see him go, but it's obviously politics really at play there. Lot went on behind the scenes, and I think that had a huge bearing on why he walked away, and obviously why Franny Ford and Noel Larkin didn't step up as the next managers either. So a lot of problems there in Galway behind the scenes.
I think a lot of problems, and I did have an award category for kind of a ministerial mess up of the year, and Mayo were on it, and Galway were on it, and Cork were on it for Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and it's going to make the point that when are we going to get a situation where professionals run businesses rather than volunteers? Yeah. And again, because you keep criticising the volunteers, and who was it on the show recently saying they're only volunteers? That's your neighbour going up to give a few, you know, hours in his evening after, you know, working. And he doesn't have the qualifications for that. How can Croke Park stand over allowing this continue while all these mess up? And it's going to continue even worse, Brian, because if we're being honest, this is just going to continue and continue and continue because volunteers cannot run businesses. These are companies which are running 3, 4, 5 million turnover per year. Other businesses would have staff of 15 doing that.
Fact, and the worst ever, the biggest cardinal sin for me is when you have the treasurers are not accountants. Like, it's ridiculous. Now, luckily, and awfully, there was a divisive vote, and we actually put in along with the Michael Deignan ticket, you know, we have a chartered accountant gone in there now as the treasurer. But
that's beyond belief, though, isn't it?
But it is on. Like you go up and down the country in all the clubs, let alone the counties. You know, there's no accountant. You know, it's just, in fairness, you can't fault people. They're mean so well. And
But it's not right
at county level, though.
No,
it really is not.
Not with that money floating around. No. And look, they do mean well, the majority, but it's so
open. You're not accusing them of anything untoward or anything like that. It's just like they're obviously not doing the right things, you know what I mean? Or being as efficient as they should be and bringing in or generating the income that they need to be. And it's just, and you hear the horror stories, and we've all been there as players, you know, not getting paid expenses and all silly stuff and suppliers not being paid. And like, that's still going on today's age.
Like. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying like, but it's completely open to corruption by someone who wanted to do it, if you know, because the checks aren't in place. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And it has been done for years as well, you know.
Yeah, there's all these stories you hear going around about the bags of money from the admission was thrown over a wall and it was going to be collected later on. But like, it's wide open to be corrupted. Like, and that's it. It's not professional governance. And like, I mean, how long is this going to continue? Yeah. Like, I mean, treasurer one is the best one ever. Yeah, like, it really is.
Actually, what's
the? There's one, the most famous stadiums in Munster. I'll leave it at that. Like, when they have their cash games, next minute, you know, it could be about 30,000 at the game. Next minute, it'd be announced, and there'd be about 15,000 announced at the game. And there'd be a big, like, laugh going around the stadium. Like, and everyone knows where it is as well.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
But I even know with my own club, Portlaoise, they used to have a chairman, Niall Kavanagh. And his profession, he's a managing director of a stone company. He runs, like, I mean, I don't know what their staff is, 30, whatever. And they have a big quarry in Kilkenny. And he just ran Portlaoise Club very well. The next fella in was a retired guard. Do you know what I mean? And in my opinion, Portlaoise Club was not run well. What would that man know about running a business? You know, that kind of way. So, like, I mean, it's just a lot of the time it's just pure potluck. You could get a treasurer that knows what to do, and then you get another one who just comes in and doesn't have a clue what to do, and it's just left up to chance instead of having it run well and knowing that it's going to be run well. Anyways, surprise manager resignation of the year has to go to Jim Gavin. This came as a huge shock and a welcome shock for all the counties that want to maybe see Dublin's dominance ending. We know Desi Farrell now is their new manager. That came out over the weekend. Definitely. So he's going to keep that continuity going. He's managed a lot of those young lads at under 21. They won an All-Ireland in 14 with Mannion, McCaffrey, Kilkenny, all that age group. Then won another one with Conn and Howard and Scully and all them in 17. So like this, you know, it's not like he doesn't know how to win. He has the legendary status that they'll all respect. So he'll be given plenty of, you know, plenty of respect in there rather than having somebody else come in who they're like, who's this lad telling us what to do? Let's be honest, Desi Farrell is a Dublin legend and he played in a way that you just don't love Gaelic football if you didn't like watching Desi Farrell play. He was just all action. I saw a thing today, lads, that they're you know the way all these secretary reports and treasurer's reports come out around this time of the year and they don't usually pay much attention to them. Dublin's sponsorship income jumped from 791,000 in and around to 2.1 million. 2.1 million in 1 year in sponsorship, lads.
Oh, my God.
Like, and their overall income is 5.2 million. 5.2 million, lads. It's just you're not working on a level playing field here, and that's the reality of it. And you have county boards all over the country breaking their backs and going into debt trying to keep up and bridge a gap to a county that you could just can't, you could just can't catch with expertise, with backroom team, with stuff like that. You can't catch them, and that's the reality of it. You can't, unless they change the system in some way to share out sponsorship money or something like that, like, I mean, and help other counties out. I don't know. Anyways, winner of surprise manager resignation of the year is Jim Gavin. All right, so award number 8 is unsurprising manager departure. And to be honest, this is a bit of a crossover with flop of the year. Because if you're a flop of the year, then you're an unsurprising manager departure, right? or there's a good chance that you are. So Liam Cairns, 4 years with Tip. Terrible year in his last year. Liam's obviously an ex-manager of mine. Doesn't give me any pleasure to nominate him, because I thought Liam was good. At least he treated us all like equals, unlike the previous manager before him, which I don't want to get into. Kevin Martin, Brian, 2 years, kind of middle of the second year. Not that long. The other ones, like, I mean, Malachy O'Rourke is another nomination. He was there with Monaghan 7 years. So suppose in your seventh year, if you're having a terrible year, you're like, geez, I've brought them as far as I can. Kevin Walsh in Galway, there 5 years, no real progress with Galway, if anything, went backwards. Kevin Martin one was a little bit surprising in that he got such an initial kind of jump out of the players that it's not like they should have been that sick of him in the middle of year two.
Yeah, like, look, obviously I ended up going in as hurling coach after Kevin left. But I went publicly before that saying that, you know, if the county board were sticking him, they had to get behind him and the players had to get behind him, because it was very obvious from the outset, like, that the players had kind of, he'd lost the players essentially, and they weren't playing anywhere near the level they should have been at.
How did he lose the players, you know, by the way? Is he a bit too strict for them, or was he giving out the whole time, or?
You see, look, it's not as much Kevin's fault as well. There's a bit of a legacy issue there as well. You know, we turn over a huge amount of players in Offaly for a county that we simply just don't have them. You know, Michael Fenley is currently at it as well. There's close to 40 in there in a training panel at the moment. And, you know, Kevin played a team at the start of the year, first round of the league against Waterford. And, it just was unrecognisable as an inter-county Offaly hurling team. And because of that, then, if so many players getting opportunities, it breeds discontent. We have a lot of players on the one level, which mightn't necessarily be up to the level that's required to challenge for serious honours. So you have a lot of players thinking they're good enough, but, you know, essentially when it comes down to it, probably not. So, you know, a little bit of discontent. Strength and conditioning coach was fired. He got the brunt of the blame. Players, you know, fitness levels weren't up to required standards, and then we saw that firsthand when we went in there. And they got relegated from that league, which was a massive setback. And I assume, and from listening to sound bites of what the county board chairman, the outgoing Tommy Byrne, said, was that he felt that they might get a bounce by removing him with the 2 games left. He said that himself, so that's what their thought process was.
Right, so how's things in Offaly now? More positive with Deignan in the mix?
Yeah, look, of course.
Brian Gavin is the Leinster Council delegate. And
Brian Gavin went for the nice handy one. You know, in fairness to Michael Deignan, and fair play to him, because it's not easy. He put his neck on the line. I think he'll bring a huge amount of organisation and you know, he's able to generate income for Offaly, as he did for Faithful Fields and for O'Connor Park, and brilliant from that perspective. And he has some good ideas in terms of employing full-time coaches, and he's brought 3 or 4 people on board with him in terms of the strategic planning. But I think he might realise that the huge part of chairman is on the ground and actually being seen and being visible in O'Connor Park and Faithful Fields on a day-to-day basis, and
it'll
be huge. And I think, like, that is really hard. And you think about it, you know, from a player perspective, you don't see the county board around, and it's the first thing you do. They don't give a shite about us, you know.
You do see them in everything, all right.
Yeah, you see them in everything, and that's going to be big change for Michael. I'm not saying he's not going to be capable, but I'm just saying it's a big massive role, you know.
Yeah, and of course you have a treasurer.
It's almost like a politician. If you're not at everything, yeah, you know, you're the worst.
Well,
the
there is part of it is being like a politician, really. Yeah. Like, I mean, you're elected, yeah, like the and you have a treasurer that knows how to count, I suppose, which is a huge which knows something about numbers. Anyways, listen, so unsurprising manager departure of the year. Like, I mean, I'm a little bit torn on this. I think probably if you're looking at Tipperary's year this year, Liam Kearns had to go. I did give flop of the year to Tipperary, so I don't want to hammer my ex-manager, so I'm going to give the unsurprising manager departure of the year to Kevin Walsh. I suppose going from an All-Ireland semi-final, going backwards, there's a lot of talk about their style of play, and I think after 5 years, maybe with the forwards Galway have, he stepped down at the right time, and I think everyone's going to be excited to see what Pádraig Joyce does with the team. So winner of unsurprising manager departure of the year for me is Kevin Walsh. Okay, so last one, lads. Or second last one, because we have one more after this. It's a bonus award. So number nine is embarrassing punditry moment of the year. So there's four nominations for this, lads. One, they're all pretty strong candidates, if you ask me. So the first one is Joe Brolly at halftime in the All-Ireland final. I think if anyone was at the Great Debate recently, I outlined the mistakes he made at halftime in no uncertain terms, Conan.
Yeah, he did. He did well. He showed good use of the big screen as well. You were showing pictures of Cooper pulling David Clifford, and you were roaring at Brolly saying, "You said this was a free out." Like, you know,
he got it so wrong though. It wasn't even funny. He got everything wrong at that half time. The free, the Johnny Cooper sending off was very, very embarrassing. In that, only Kieran Whelan, who's another nomination for embarrassing punditry moment of the year, he admitted he was biased towards Dublin. Imagine admitting, sometimes when I talk about Leash, I feel afterwards, have I gone too hard on them just to show that I'm not trying to be biased?
And
you, because you don't want, that's, if you don't have credibility and think that you're biased, how can you ever talk about that team ever again? Kieran Whelan admitted he was biased. Now, I thought Kieran Whelan should have got the red card from the following week, the same as Joe Brolly. He can't be on a panel talking about Dublin. He's admitted on national television he's biased towards them. Anyways, Whelan admitted he was biased. This was such a shit show in that All-Ireland halftime. Now, Whelan was admitting he was biased, and Brolly was more biased than someone who admitted he was biased.
Yeah, and like I was saying earlier, I've never seen the verdict so unanimous against him. Like, everyone was just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was so obvious, and they'd gone so far the other way that it was just clueless stuff.
And ganged up on Pat Splann, who analysed it correctly.
Yeah.
And Kevin McStay got it correct in the co-com.
Yeah, and like, Whelan admitting he's biased, right? But we all know that he wants Dublin to win. Like, you want Leicester when I went there.
Yeah.
But you like to think that you can still analyse the bloody
game. A decision.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the pressure Whelan's under. Because living in Dublin, and you know the element of their support that are toxic.
Mm.
You come across them on Twitter, and they'd almost try to convince me that I hate Dublin. Or you, that, you know, if you say anything against what they want you to say. And I often reply to them and say, oh, I'm biased. In the opinion of a totally biased Dublin fan. Do you know what I mean? How can you possibly even listen to this nonsense? Brian, you would have, I'm sure in hurling, you're coming down to collect the ball and you use your body to shield the ball, and, you know, you end up getting your marker run into your back and you get a free. This is the oldest trick in the book that these fellas couldn't analyse at half time.
Yeah, I actually agree. There's one statement you made. Like, Joe Brolly got thrown under the bus, really. And I think Kieran Whelan should have been, you know, yellow carded or red carded, whatever you want to call it, for the replay as well. I don't think he deserves, after that performance at halftime, to go back onto that show either. And as he said, you know, admitting that you're biased. They got it so wrong, it wasn't funny. Because I remember, because obviously I wasn't at it and I was watching telly, and I was literally tearing my hair out saying, how could you, in like looking at this in slow motion, be calling this so wrong? And I agreed, like, to gang up on Pat Spillane, And kind of imply that he was the one that was being biased.
Yeah, it was
like, oh my God.
Which was just, like, it was just unbelievable. In Whelan's defence, did he mean he's biased that he wanted Dublin to win? No, because he meant that he was being biased as in he'll call these things wrong for his own county. Like, you'd love to think he didn't mean it that way, Conan.
I think he said, I'm biased, so I'm going to say it was a free out or something like that.
Yeah.
Where we're all watching the pictures, and it wasn't even like Cooper came in the back. Cooper had been done completely, went around the other side of him. grabbed onto his arm and pulls him down, like, you know.
Yeah.
And this has been shown as those boys were talking.
Just very disappointing that he would say
GAA TV or whatever, the local, you know, the, yeah, the local. Yeah. You know, if I've done Midlands 103 and you'd be there and you'd be giving out, you know, you're being biased, but you don't care because the only one that's listening are Offaly people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know, like that's totally different. You try to be as objective
partisan
as possible.
Well, yeah, on local radio is partisan.
On local,
yeah,
radio, but, like, you know, you're on the national, you know, airwaves, and the biggest game of the year. No, like, there's no place for that.
No, no, not at all. Jackie Tyrrell, he's down here for embarrassing punditry moment of the year. He blamed Cottle Barrett for Richie Hogan's red. So, like, I mean, you can take the blame away from Richie Hogan and say he didn't mean it, which is completely fine. But I think Jackie took it a step further and actually blamed Cathal Barrett for Richie Hogan hitting him in the face with his elbow.
Yeah.
He said, and I think it was on the Sunday game that night, he says, I don't know if it's a definite red card. It's made to look it's made to look a lot worse. Cathal Barrett, for me, went down way too easy. He made an awful lot out of it. Ah, lads, that's lousy now, Brian.
Yeah, and you let Henry away light enough as well. Henry was very, very on Richie's side, really protecting him at half time as well.
Yeah,
quite biased too.
Yeah, now, that's biased too. It's on the same level though, lads, isn't it? Why can't you call it?
You know, Henry did say it was poor tackling, but he was kind of implying it wasn't Richie to hit him, it was his arm. So it was some mental statement like that. But yeah, look. Jackie's trying to imply, obviously, that, you know, Cathal Barrett lay down and took it too soft. And, you know, no, in fairness, you get an elbow into the head, you'll know all about it. But
that's the thing. The point I make, when you see he got it flush across the chin, right, and he fell back.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever see even bloody Anthony Joshua getting knocked out by Germán Ruiz? Sometimes they're just a glancing punch, yeah, at the top of the head, and a big 17, 20 stone man just falls onto the ground. Like, you don't know how you react to getting a glancing blow like that.
I agree with you, but I think it goes back to Kilkenny's mindset and the way that they hurl and the way that Richie Hogan jumped up when he was hit by Bill Cooper. The way, yeah, you think back at Tommy Walsh when he jumped up when Benny Dunn hit him straight into the head.
Yeah.
That's just the way they're brought up, and they don't see it any other way.
Yeah.
And they're blind to that to a fault, obviously. It's really admirable. So I can see it. I kind of came up in that culture as well, and yeah, I do believe in that sort of thing myself.
And JJ said here on the show, and the one thing that did make a little bit more sense to me, said that wouldn't have been a red in Kilkenny club hurling, and I believe that.
Yeah.
But Jackie, yeah, that's okay. So I understand JJ saying it wasn't a red. I understand Henry saying it wasn't a red. But for me, Jackie took it to a new level by blaming Cathal Barrett. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Okay, so the last nomination has to be Donal O'Cusack. We're leaving Derek McGrath out of this because I think Derek McGrath...
he's getting away light now.
Well, look, I think Donal O'Cusack brought it up.
Yeah.
I think Derek had talked about that on the show before. I don't know what Derek was going down that road again for, but basically it was self-serving stuff out of the two of them. You can't forgive Derek or give him a complete free pass. But Donal O'Cusack took it to another extreme then when he said he was talking, the context here is he's talking about people who criticise defensive systems in hurling or sweeper systems. He says, I actually believe that type of accusation of disrespecting the traditions of the game is part of the last remnants of British culture on these islands.
Well, Wooly, I don't know about you, but he has to win this award. It's the greatest load of shite I've ever heard in my life. Don Logan's come out with some rare ones now down through the years, but this really topped it all off.
Yeah. Well, Conan, you're obviously from Derry, so you know a lot about British culture.
You behave yourself,
and all about oppression up there. How can you see the connection he's made or the dots he's joined here?
That is terrible, Kerry. I really don't know what he's talking about. I thought it would have been an Irish person that would have been like, you know, saying that you're disrespecting the traditions of the game. Why would a British person say you're disrespecting the traditions of the game? A British person wouldn't give a shit about that.
Yeah, no, I think it's the British British people's
influence on Irish society.
Yeah, but it's their inability to criticise their own sport. You know, yeah, this kind of, oh, it's perfect, it's great. Yeah, I think that's, look, I'm doing this man a favour here, trying my best to find, you know, kind of what the hell is he talking about, because it was a head scratcher for everybody. But I think that might be what he's talking about, is their inability to be self-deprecating maybe about their own I don't know.
In a way, yeah, I thought it was a decent tactic from him. He didn't land it perfectly, but I thought, like, you know, trying to get people who are criticizing defensive football to think that they're British, then they might quickly soften their coughs a bit.
Remnants, yeah. The last remnants. What a line from the Sunday game. And the worst thing about this is this didn't come off the top of his head. I've been thinking about what can't do a Cork accent. This is something now that this is I did a Dublin one. He said something like, this is something that I've been thinking about actually a lot recently. Okay, embarrassing punditry moment of the year has to go to Don Lug Cusack for the last remnants of British culture on these islands.
Can I just say thanks for losing me my job in RTE? I'm just after criticising all my colleagues, so thanks, Willie. Appreciate that one.
You're on the COCOM staff. You're different. This is different. This is even.
I'm
like
only on radio as well. You see, I'm only small fish. You know.
All right, congratulations, Don Lug Cusack. Okay, lads, the last award before we let you go is the JP McManus sponsored award for the worst use of mobile phones. the nominations for this are Shane Dowling, enjoying his night out, putting his usual story up on Instagram. I don't know why people bother doing it. What kind of a distraction is this to your night out that you need to, and then you have to edit the video and stick it into different parts and, oh Christ, imagine that on a night out. So anyways, inadvertently, he recorded somebody putting something into one of his teammates' hands, Peter Casey. Looked suspicious.
A receipt and change.
Did look suspicious, probably looking at it. Peter Casey has since got a doctor's report and to clear his name. So that's nomination one. Shane McMahon is, I suppose, completely innocent in all of this. You know, while I have no interest in taking those stories on a night out, lots of young people do. So I suppose we can't criticize. That's what they're all at. And then the second nomination from Limerick is the unidentified Limerick panel member who recorded his teammate getting in a straightener with some fan over in New York. And geez, they had to cancel their awards night and everything over it, Brian. How do you think they've handled this whole thing?
Oh, some mess for John Kiely to deal with in the background.
There's nobody gone, though. There was talk there was going to be a few of them given the bullet.
There isn't been official word. I've heard rumours that there's a couple of panel members being dropped. But then you don't know how much of that you can believe. And the person who was supposed to video that fight as well was one of the main players on the team as well. So we'll see how that will be dealt with.
In my experience, it depends who it is doing these things, because
it's easy to drop a panel member, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
great message.
You know, and make one of the team members sit out a game or something. You know,
but like. I was only talking to Cottle Barrett here, and he was dropped from the Tipperary panel under Michael Ryan. He had gone out after a match against Cork, then gone out the following weekend. And ended up getting injured against Cork, and he ended up getting into a bit of bother the following weekend. You know, that's well documented. But he was the easiest person ever to drop and make an example of, because he couldn't play for the rest of the summer. He got a bad injury. Do you know what I mean? So managers aren't stupid. They're not going to get rid of someone that they need, unless it's, you know, really, really, you know.
I always say you need to get people over the line, like, you know, a certain line of standard, but you have to help some people over the line as well when they're worth helping over. And if there's ones who aren't that worth it, then you can just cut them loose and tell the squad, this won't be tolerated.
Exactly. It's the easy one. So the JP McManus sponsored, he didn't sponsor this, award for the worst use of a mobile phone goes to the unidentified Limerick hurler. We can't mention that. Could or could not still be on the panel. We think he'll still be on it because he's too good. Who recorded his friend having a straightener with some fan in New York. And so congratulations. Award, who award, will we send this to?
The award for the worst award. Goes to this one.
Yeah, maybe we'll get JP McManus to sponsor the award for the worst award. Anyways, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll do a best of the year, something like that, and then we're all off for Christmas. We'll talk to you then. Thanks very much for listening to the Woolly Awards, and you'll probably never listen to them again. Talk to you. Good luck.
GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going. So They're opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, when we're not allowed to talk it out.